You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an environmental activist tells us how her six-year sailing journey on the Atlantic Ocean helped her come to terms with living in a world facing climate change.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news. On Tuesday, U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher's constituents in Green Bay held a town hall event knowing the lawmaker wasn't going to be there.
Robert Mentzer joins us now for the details of that story and other top news from the week. He's a storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joins us every Friday to look at some of the week's biggest news. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
So why did a group of residents in northeastern Wisconsin have this congressional town hall without the congressional representative?
Well, I mean, you got to, you know, they recorded their messages. They're going to send them to their elected representatives. So Congress was off this week, and in these recesses is often a time when people want to meet with their members of Congress, and it's normal for Congress members to hold town halls or public events when they're on recess. But on this recess, there have been conspicuously few of those in Wisconsin or anywhere in the country, and it seems to be an intentional strategy by Republicans to try to counteract some of the headlines and some of the viral videos that came at town hall meetings earlier this year when constituents were angry about the health care bill and were yelling at their representatives about the consequences of these policies they're working on. So in the absence of a Gallagher town hall, about 100 constituents in the Green Bay area showed up and had one without him.
And so what came out of that?
So, I mean, this is, you know, it's a piece of political theater. I don't say that as a value judgment, but this is a tactic, right? So mostly these are, you know, folks of a liberal persuasion who wanted to talk about the American Health Care Act, the Obamacare repeal, and so would give, you know, the sort of emotional testimony that is, you know, that is everywhere right now about, you know, my daughter has pre-existing conditions. I lost my job and could lose my health care and other things to really underline the consequences of that bill. And so, you know, they hope that, you know, this is not the first time that organizers have held sort of these empty chair town halls. And in February, also in Green Bay, there was they invited U.S. Senator Ron Johnson and held a town hall meeting without him. And so it's kind of a, you know, it's a way to try to show, you know, put some emphasis on these issues, sort of with or without the elected representative.
And in Representative Gallagher's case, his office had said he held a phone town hall, a conference call town hall. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. And that's, I mean, you know, that is a tool. Sometimes you'll hear Congress people try to say that, well, you can actually reach more people and it's more convenient. But, I mean, who are they kidding, right? I mean, you're missing something when it's not the sort of face-to-face interaction at a telephone town hall. It's nothing like the same level of immediacy.
Talking to Rob Mentzer from USA Today Network Wisconsin, looking at some top Wisconsin news from the past week. A lot going on in the legislature lately, Rob. This week, a bill creating tougher penalties for University of Wisconsin student protesters advanced out of an assembly committee. What would this bill do exactly?
Yeah, so this would require the University of Wisconsin to take disciplinary action against students who disrupt speeches on campus, and also would mandate that the UW itself stay neutral on topics of political controversy. So it's a little bit hard to know how likely this is to actually become law. It passed out of an assembly committee, so it may or may not get a vote in the full assembly. It may or may not then be passed by the state senate. But it's still interesting, just in the sense that it fits into the sort of culture war around campus speech and campus norms.
Yeah, this comes in the backdrop of people paying a lot of attention to cases where protesters on campus had, one way or another, disrupted speakers, conservative speakers, in a lot of the right. examples given. One case here on the UW-Madison campus, for example. What are Republicans saying about the need for this kind of change to protect these speakers?
Right.
Well, that's exactly it, right? I mean, there is these things are not they're not made up. These cases really have existed. They have happened in Wisconsin, where you know, a student group invites a conservative speaker to campus, and then another group of liberal students determines that this speaker is beyond the pale in some way, and so either disrupts the event or shouts down the speaker. You know, the case in Wisconsin was fairly muted. There was some sort of heckling and some protests, and then they left, and then the speech went on. But there have been cases elsewhere in the country where people, you know, I don't know, pull a fire alarm or really, like, prevent someone from even entering a lecture hall. And so, you know, this is something that the conservative media, Fox News and talk radio and so on, they love to talk about these cases of student protests and sort of try to paint the portrait that this is indicative of the left, and they'll shout you down. It's political correctness out of control. And so this bill by a Republican legislator is an attempt to sort of capitalize on that strain of argument.
And how have Democrats reacted?
Well, I mean, the main thing is, it's a bit of a weird thing for the legislature to get involved with. UW leaders say, on its face reasonably, that universities already have campus rules in place to punish students who disrupt events. It doesn't require a state law to make that happen. And the Board of Regents has already made it the official policy of the university to support the free exchange of ideas, even those that might be considered offensive or out of the norm. So their case, and that's the, you know, Democrats would echo that case largely, is that this is really like meddling from the legislature for something that is, you know, it does not require the state to get involved.
Right. The state would mandate, you touched on this briefly, a fairly substantial punishment potentially for someone, especially if they're repeat violators. We're talking suspension for a term, expulsion after a few incidents.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a few incidents, that's not necessarily unreasonable. If a student is like repeatedly pulling a fire alarm on some speaker, you know, all right, maybe that student should be expelled. But the question really is whether that's something that the state assembly should be deciding, or if it's more for the university itself to manage how it disciplines and deals with students who violate rules. I mean, there is an existing rule that they are violating when they do that.
And finally, some news about spelling in Wisconsin, apparently. There's the big spelling bee this week, of course. So Google Trends released each state's most searched how to spell words. So when people go online, apparently say, how do I spell blank? They tell you what the top word is in each state. And the state in Wisconsin that we're asking how to spell, or the word we're asking how to spell, is Wisconsin.
Right. I mean, listen, it's a little bit of a tricky word. Have you never made a typo on Wisconsin? I have. I guess, though, it's a typo. Like, I do know how to spell it when that happens. But so, I don't know. I mean, this is so fun. This is, like, irresistible, this map, to look at what the most frequently, I don't know if it's most frequently misspelled word or just the most frequently, maybe the better way to say it is the most frequently inquired word in each state. And so this made the rounds. Wisconsin does have the distinction of being the only state where the state name is that most common search term. Now, the Mississippians, they know how to spell their name.
Right, but you think Connecticut, Massachusetts, I got to think about those myself.
Right. Yeah, Connecticut. Come on, that's a tricky one. Connecticut actually was one of my favorites because Connecticut and West Virginia, each their most common string was how to spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. So there's not a lot that unites Connecticut and West Virginia, but a love of Mary Poppins is one thing that does.
And Rob, is there a word as we wrap up that you have trouble with that makes you have to reach for the dictionary? Online or otherwise.
So many words. I subscribe to the view that if you stare at any word for long enough, it appears misspelled. Like it doesn't, the word leg, if you really look at it, looks wrong, will start to look wrong. So I definitely, again, I call it a typo, but I certainly am guilty of, I type, Wisconsin wrong probably multiple times a day, but I like to think I catch it then when I do.
Mine, I have to try a couple times. Entrepreneur, Caribbean, Mediterranean. Those are, I'm never going to get them right on the first try.
Those are good. Those are good.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us, no matter how you spell Wisconsin.
Thank you.
That's Robert Mentzer, storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin, based in Wausau. He joins us every Friday to look back at the week's biggest state news.